Encourage me the whole way long. Make me say, ow! What's poppin', y'all? Nestorius Public Radio. You're listening to us live on Skid Row motherfucking studios.com. If you're awake, you washed your underwears, you're in your nudes, eating cornflakes with split pea and boysenberries dipped in rice milk, call us. 1-800-893-9562. We're here to answer all sorts of questions, anything you want to know. If you're not listening to us live, make sure that you go to iTunes and you subscribe. Go to Nestorius Public Radio and hit subscribe. I'm your host, Nestor Rodriguez, a.k.a.
Yo, 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 Nestorius.
Yo, 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 yo.
Support for NPR comes from the Endowment Fund, trying to get more endowed through male stimulants.
That's my boy. That's my boy, Simon Kaufman. What's up, baby?
Yo, we educating people. It's not even just about doing radio shows, guys. It's not just about radio, dude. It's about taking it to the people, the voice of the people, educating, making it happen, showing you what the deal is. We've been there. We can hold your hand through this.
That's right. That's right. And on mic three is my man, Rich C.
What's up, everybody?
He's got his throat lubricated. He's got the Ludens. Yeah,
I got the Ludens honey licorice kicking.
I got the feeling for the flavor of a Pringle
in my throat.
Yeah, and we got an amazing special guest tonight. Nestorius Public Radio, NPR, would really love to open our hearts and welcome my new young brother, Mason Pryor.
What up, what up, what up?
Happens to be Richard Pryor's son. You're his third son.
Yeah, I'm the youngest.
His fifth child.
Yes.
Right. I did my research before.
Oh, you did.
I did all my research. You know, we got Mason Pryor. Your dad, I mean, if you ask any comedian who their inspiration was, I would tell them, don't even say Richard Pryor. Don't even say Richard Pryor, because it's obvious.
Gallagher. No. It's got to be Gallagher.
Bobcat Goldthwait, man.
It's really got to be.
Bobcat.
Yeah. No, I would say, don't mention Richard Pryor, because it's obvious. Everybody was inspired by Richard Pryor. But go ahead, Mason. Who do you get when people ask you or you ask people who their influences are? Who are your influences?
You just asked me two questions.
I did.
You did.
Answer whichever questionnaire.
See how it comes at me?
See, that's the double questionnaire.
The first thing I'm going to do is to ask you a trick question.
This is not going to be any.
Big up for your double dribbling, double asking questions, motherfucker.
Double dragon, bro. This is Nestorius, the double dragon of comedy.
Okay.
Now I'm ready.
So answer whichever question you want.
So however you want to answer.
Okay. I mean, for me, I really rarely ask other comedians, other people, you know, what's that inspiration thing. A lot of times they come up to me and they tell me, you know, they hear like, oh, your dad's Richard Pryor, you know.
Yeah.
You get that whole thing, which is, you know, cool because I love hearing stories about my pops anyway.
Right. Because,
you know, he had me a little later, so he was already calmed down. So I get to hear like real Rich.
Well, he had been there, done that, whipped around the fucking merry-go-round a few times. Yo, we're gonna go in depth about your dad.
Let's do it.
So we also omit the logic. First of all, I met you, Mason, a couple of weeks ago. We were doing a taping for Stars.
Right.
But it just turned out that Marina's film was airing. This was on a Friday. It was airing. There was a screening on a Tuesday. And I asked you if you heard of it. And you were like, nah.
Right.
I'm like, dude. You got to come.
Yeah.
I said, and you were like, yeah, I'm down.
Of course.
So we rolled.
Well, what else would you do? You're somebody coming to you. Hey, you want to watch a movie of your dad?
Hello.
Yeah. Sure.
Hello.
You're like, no, Terminator 17 is coming out.
No, man.
How do you know the director?
No, man.
Marina?
No, man. The Shining is playing tonight. I can't go see no Richard Pryor movie. How do I know Marina? Marina Zenovich is a good friend of my wife, Rosemary.
Okay, so wait. Slow down. Is she the director or the producer?
She's the director.
Okay.
Apparently, I don't know the whole story, but what I believe happened is Showtime, or she approached Showtime to do the documentary, and they approved it, and then she went forward moving it. Marina also did a documentary called Roman Polanski, Wanted and Desired, which is another amazing documentary. documentary for those of you out there who are listening and want to do some homework on Ms. Zenovich. Do it up. But anyway, we all got the opportunity to see Richard Pryor on Mythologic. I was sitting next to you, that's Mason.
Right. That's right.
How was that for you? How was that experience for you?
I mean, honestly, dude, it was cool. I mean, a lot of the stuff they were talking about, I already knew. I kind of got to...
No, I'm talking about sitting next to me.
Oh, sitting next to you? I mean, wait, come on.
How did you feel Nestor tried to hold your hand?
Well, you know, Nestor, he had tried to rub my thigh a couple times.
But, yeah, well, he's sneaky like that.
He was a good chef, before he brought in snacks.
You got to be careful. And, his hand has a mind of its own.
Next to me in the middle of a movie theater.
Yeah, they call him the double dragon.
No, but seriously,
only Nestor would be that narcissistic. Yeah. You watched this movie about your dad. Yeah, I saw this documentary. Yeah, but what was I like sitting next to you? What was that like? Yeah, being my presence?
Am I a good movie watcher?
Right. No,
how
no,
did
no
I
fuck
do?
Your dad on television. No.
How did you feel?
This in like my audience, he knows how narcissistic right. I am.
You know, before we talk about, like, you know, relationship between, you know, your father, how you like the movie, we have a real important question we got to get to. Do you ever get asked because your dad, like, is any chick in your life ever been
honestly,
in a bar
dude,
and been
I
like,
do, you know, yeah, I know what
she's
talking
like,
about,
oh
yeah.
my God, I need to bone this guy. Like residuals. Do you ever get residuals?
It happened that night when we were
you know what? The problem is, I get that. But it's always like women that wanted to fuck Rich when he was the, you know, young, oh, so hip, hot like, stuff. So I get like women come ladies. Up to me like, let me tell you something, honey. I just wanted to give it to you just because of your dad.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah, you're a hit at the, like, summer picnics at
oh
the church.
Oh, my God, dude,
like,
retirement
but
home
But the club's
pimping.
Not so much.
Yeah. Like, well, no, dude, is he a rap star?
Let me tell you something. And I'm going to be honest, on air. There's nothing like hitting it from the back with a woman with a walker.
Yeah.
She gets the arch in her back, dude, that just does something to her. Yeah. You lift that depends to the side and lift that moo-moo up. Ooh-wee.
Yeah, they call you Skywalker. You just hit it.
Skywalker. Call my dick the Fountain of Youth.
Yes.
So we'll talk a little bit about the film, but before, why don't I go back a little bit?
Okay.
Tell me your place in the prior hierarchy of kids.
Okay.
Not necessarily, like,
well, yeah, it's definitely a lineage bloodline.
Right.
Hey, your mom next to the throne for the heir of the, you know.
It's
temple.
Like Game of Thrones.
Okay, your mom was not married.
Which house are you from?
Your mom was
from
not married.
The Elliotton family.
Yeah.
Your mom was not married to.
No,
to
she was not. She was not.
She was
in the running.
Flynn.
She was in the running. She made it to like the finals.
She was between
like, she made
five
it to
and
final
six.
Four. But she didn't make it. She didn't get
she
to
She was
it.
Between five and six, your
yeah.
mom.
Yeah, she was.
So how is that? I mean, when did you, at what point in your life did you say, or did you realize what it meant that Richard Pryor was your father? At what point?
Probably when I got a little older, man.
Like what?
High school. I mean, stuff happened when I was in junior high. Like, okay, I was supposed to take a test one day in junior high, and my teacher pulled me out of the class and had me come out and meet, like, neighbors. So that was pretty cool to get out of class just to go meet some people. He's like, this is Richard Pryor, son. This is my student.
This is
so
where
I got out of a test just to go shake hands with people.
That's kind of brilliant.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Columbus.
Columbus, Ohio. Okay.
Yeah, to be specific, Pickerington, the suburbs.
Right.
So okay. Sounds cooler when you say Columbus.
Well, no, what it is, it's weird because it's like, you know, you hear somebody tell you, like, where are you from? You tell them the city, and they're like, oh, right. What part? And then you're like, oh, and they're like, that's outside of the area.
Right. Yeah, you got to say Columbus. No one's going to, you can't be like, where are you from? Pickerington, you know, no one knows what it is.
Well, I'm in California now, which is fucked up because I get people to ask me, like, where are you from? And I'll tell them Ohio, and they don't even know where that is on the map.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it was same thing on the East Coast. Most New York think Washington State is like Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Right. I actually have to look at it on the map because I never know which Washington is where.
Right. Now, see, Washington, that's what it is, that region called. Northwest?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel even worse for y'all because that's the only other place. Like, what it is like Midwest, we're like, that Northwest is the reason we're not those guys. Because, like, where are you from? The Midwest? Ah, oh, at least we're not Northwest.
Yeah. No, Northwest, brutal. Yeah.
So you were in junior high.
Right.
That was one of your first experiences.
Right.
Describe another experience. I mean, that's pretty cool.
I mean, you know, I mean, it happened when I was younger. You know, I had a, you know, little teacher that used to do some things for me, you know. right, hand jobs during recess.
Right.
You know?
No.
Just the usual.
Really?
You used to crumble cookies. I had a couple of babysitters that was really generous.
You used to crumble cookies on your penis and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, keeping the legacy on.
No, I'm serious.
I mean, honestly, I was a regular kid in Ohio. Like, you want to go there? I grew up in Columbus, in a city, like in a part of Columbus that was just pretty much about, do you have money or not? And past that, it's Columbus. No one cared.
No one cared.
No one my age knows who my dad is, number one.
Right.
So I didn't get a lot of that hype of that. And then people treated me differently when I started telling people. And that happened when I started to be an entertainer.
Right. But I'm not necessarily asking you, I'm not asking you how other people treated you, per se, once they knew you were Richard Pryce. And I'm asking you, how was it for you? I mean, that's a heavy burden. That's a heavy load. Yeah.
It was all positive up until I started being a performer. As a kid, it was just, you know, oh, hey, you know, luck of the draw. You grew up rich, like.
Yeah.
You're Pryor. Congratulations.
Right. So I want to talk about that. Like, tell us about some of your performing. Let's talk about what you do. I mean,
like
you
when that transition to me being a performer.
Yeah, tell us what you do. Tell the for anyone to listen out there that doesn't know.
Yeah, I'm a comedian. I've been doing comedy for about 6 years.
Stand up for 6 years, mm-hmm. All the time in L.A.
No. I started in Columbus.
Okay, what's the scene like out there?
Ohioan. It's cool. We got. I really did mostly like this place, Scarlet and Gray, on campus, just an open mic night, and I did a Funny Bone at the Easton.
Nice.
North. Yeah.
Now. When you come out on stage and people know you're Richard Pryor's son, I mean, what's that like? I mean, do you think that helps you? Does it hurt you, or does it do both? Does it do different on different nights? Yeah.
When I'm trying to get booked and get paid, it helps.
Yeah.
You know, if I meet that standard, then it's fine. But if I don't, then it's so much worse.
Do people judge you? They judge you pretty harshly.
Yeah, of course.
Like, oh, he's not his father.
I had that even, like, in grade school, like, clowning with friends. I had a friend of mine who used to always tell me, like, how are you Richard Pryor's son and not funnier? Like,
being a comedian, not that you're trying to live up or fill your father's shoes, right? Put that shit aside.
Okay.
You're going to get the bullshit from comedians that are going to be like, ah, that nigga thinks he's funny.
Right.
That nigga thinks just because he's a rich guy.
Right.
Or this, that, and the other, right? Fuck all that. That's all bullshit.
Right.
You know what I mean? But what I want to know is, like, at what point do you realize, fuck, that was my dad?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because you weren't alive when a good portion of the shit he did.
Yeah.
You know, my man had, I don't know how many heart attacks. He fucking set himself on fire. He got arrested for shooting. I mean, my man was crazy.
Yeah.
He was fucking out of his mind.
He was pops. Yeah.
so that's
for y'all like, man, this is crazy. Y'all don't know all the stuff he did. Y'all don't know the half of the stuff.
Right,
man.
I'm sure.
Imagine the stuff the police didn't file, man.
I met this cat last night. Leslie Smalls. He's a director.
Okay.
Comedy director. He's directed a few. You can IMDb him. So he's in the process of trying to do a comedy special with A-list comedians at your father's Northridge property, who somebody else purchased.
Wow.
Right? With the property where he set himself on fire.
Yeah.
And he fucking ran out to on Parthenia Street.
Right.
And fucking, here's the irony of the whole thing. He could have fucking ran to the right. There was a pool on the property.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's serious. That's
funny.
Straight the fuck up. My man ran out onto Parthenia Street and ran out of the street. And he fucking, you know, was lit. You know, your father was... You know, here's my early experience of Richard Pryor. It was 1978.
Okay.
I think I was telling you this earlier. I was about, I don't know, 14 years old. And at that time, you had to be 18, 19 or whatever to get into an R-rated movie. Of course, this is New York City. No one gives a shit. You got in. Live in concert. That was the first one I saw, and he was talking about, you know, he wanted to die like his father, right? He said, my dad died fucking, right? I want to die like that. And he said, you know, my man came and went at the same time. And I mentioned this to you earlier, the reason it stuck out on me because I was sitting there in a predominantly African-American with some Latinos where I grew up theater, and everyone's fucking laughing, even the dude who I went with who was around my age.
Right.
Cracking the fuck up. And I felt like a moron because I didn't even know what the fuck coming meant.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's weird. But something happened to me. I remember seeing your father on stage and going, God damn. This guy, all he's got to do is scratch his ass and everyone laughs. That's how he had everybody. It was just like, whatever he did, You know, anything could have been a punchline.
The one thing I've always taken from watching your father's performances is how so much of stand-up comedy isn't even your jokes. People get hung up on the joke. Oh, I'm crafting my joke and this and that. Yeah, the joke is, but it's a live performance. It's about energy. It's about a connectivity, human to human.
Right.
You know, that's what I would say. I go after people's souls. I don't care if you laugh.
You go after their souls. Like, you literally just go on stage and start shepherding their souls in.
I use an old Wiccan.
You just walk up with a scythe.
I have a bone.
Do you have a stick?
I have bones and some cockroaches that I've concocted in a with some incense. It's an old Wiccan. And I just take their souls.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
No, what I'm saying is this. What's funny? Think about it. What's funny to people? People who sit there. So many comics, they have, like, you know, it's like they sit there and they're like, okay, so what's your material? Oh, well, I was at the grocery store today. And it's just meaning, like, okay, let me say what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is what's always going to hit is when you hit the human experience, your soul.
When you connect.
Everybody has a soul. Some of the crowd might be white. Some might be black. Some might
when
be this.
When you connect.
That's what I'm talking about. I go for people's hearts and souls. Right, right. And that's what your dad did.
You go for connecting with the audience is what you're saying.
Your father is credited in stand-up comedy history as the first comedian to ever talk about his own personal life, upbringing, and emotions. Before your dad, it was my mother-in-law, you know, my wife.
Take my wife, please.
Yeah. Why is it every time I go to the bank?
Well, they were joking. Your father, but here's the thing. I have crazy stories. I'm sure you got crazy stories.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been doing stand-up comedy for a while. What your father did is almost fucking, to me, it's not impossible, but it's a tall order. Sharing those stories, okay?
Right.
In a comedic form that everyone can relate to was it's almost like an out of body experience for dude, I've listened to your fucking father's tapes. Here, I'm going to play one. Niggas versus police. Okay?
Love when you play with your friends.
Cops put a hurting on your ass, man. You know, they really degrade you. White folks don't believe that shit. Don't believe cops degrade. Oh, come on, those beatings. Those people are resisting arrest. I'm tired of this harassment of police officers. Cops, the police live in your neighborhood, see? And you be knowing them as Officer Timpson.
Hello, Officer Timpson. Going bowling tonight? Yes, nice pinto you have.
Niggas don't know I'm like that. See, white folks get a ticket, they pull over. Hey, officer, yes, glad to be of help. Hey, oh. Nigga got to be talking about, I am reaching into my pocket for my license.
See, that's real shit.
Yeah. You know what's so funny about that?
Because I don't want to be no motherfucking accident. The great, I don't know, you know, it's awful. You wonder why a nigga don't go completely mad. You know, you do. You get your shit together, you work all week, right? And then you get dressed, you make, maybe say, cat, make $125. We get $80 if he lucky. Right? And he go out, get clean, be driving with his old lady, going out to a club, and police pull over. Get out of the car, it was a robbery. A nigga look just like you. All right, put your hands up, take your pants down, spread your cheeks. Now, what nigga feel like having fun after that?
Oh, let's just go home, baby. You go home, beat your kids and shit. You gonna take that shit out on somebody.
You were gonna say,
I had,
what's crazy about that?
What's crazy about that? I had, people that know me knew I grew up in Pickerington. I grew up in the suburb. But I had, like, hung out with my friends, you know, in the city or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even gonna say hood. Because this is L.A. They take their ghettos to a whole other level. I'm not trying to.
Like, yeah, they ain't no hood.
I'm down with y'all, man. Yeah.
They ain't no hood.
The first time I went to an L.A. place, and like in a hood somewhere, and I saw 150 Crips. I was like, oh, that's what a gang looks like.
But, I've always said, people say, oh, it's a bad neighborhood. No, three guys hanging on a corner,
exactly.
That's not a bad neighborhood.
That's not a bad.
50-plus guys, that's a bad neighborhood. Whenever 50 people assembled doing nothing
exactly.
on an afternoon.
Exactly, that's the craziest thing. You'll see like 200 dudes uniformly dressed to go to the supermarket. Like, hey, cuz on everything. I need eggs. Get the crew together, dog. Like, who hates you that bad? You need 200 people to walk with you to get some muffins.
Right. Go get some eggs.
Right.
And shit.
But yeah, I'm sitting there. We did a show, and me and my boy Mike just get done doing the show. We're leaving out. We're hitting the main street. And the police come and swoop us. And this is like on campus at Ohio State. So this isn't the most, you know, safe neighborhood to be doing nonsense.
Right.
Police are on it. So he whoops him. My dude Mike immediately throws his hands up like this outside the car.
Raises his hands.
Hands up. Both of them just did not move. Didn't park the car. Didn't just.
Right. That's fucked
up. It was so funny. I don't know why I just did a visual joke on air.
No, I had to describe it. He raised his hands.
I thought on the radio, I was like, what happened?
He raised his hands like a black, like a guilty black man in the middle of a white neighborhood.
That's what I did.
Yeah, that's what he did.
You know, but the thing about what your dad did, in order to be able to do that, in order to be able to command the audience on that level, you have to kill every like sacred cow in you. Like you can't care about your reputation. Like one of the things I love about stand-up. And it's for me, I've been doing it 7 years, so just like a little bit longer than you. And it's almost become its own spiritual journey because you have to kill yourself, in a sense, to find yourself, to be able to deliver yourself on stage.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's this own journey into yourself. And you can't care about people's opinions. You really have to get over it or else you have to go home. Yeah. And it's hard because we're conditioned to care about what people say about us here or say about here. And that's really the journey is just to really, I'm here in this physical form to deliver this and I'm going to try to do it and I don't care what people say. And that's one of the things your father did. And that's what talk about real. What's real? Real is real. No facade, no ego, no reputation.
Really, really, really real. Real.
I think, you're getting it. You just have to be truthful to yourself and all the bad and good about it. But most of the truth inside everybody is not all, it's not good. Right. If you're really being truthful, I mean, when you're telling a story, you're talking about yourself, most of the time people are trying to sugarcoat it, make it better, you know, talking themselves up or whatever. But, you know, your father didn't do that at all,
right. You know,
and it's talking about your ego or talking about your being a man and all that and all that. But it's talking about how shitty the ego is or how your ego will get you in trouble. And if you were, I think if you're truly, you know, you can do what you said, just expose yourself at that soft underbelly. People will accept you, appreciate you, and probably find some place within themselves that they can relate to and like, holy shit, it's the gospel truth, you know? It's you know?
You could fillet yourself open. I mean, these colorful stories.
Richard Pryor, I believe, had done two recordings before he did his first concert movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In 1971, he did a movie called Live and Smoking. You watch the movie, you will see someone who is completely bombs. It's his first recording, video recording, okay? When you look at this, you realize that, you know, he evolved into who you came to see and believe and identify with.
Is that the one where he has the stuff written in the background, like the food prices written in the background?
Yeah, he's in the East Village in West Village.
And there's like the prices of the food up in the background.
He says, I suck a dick. Did you? I mean, it's so uncomfortable that yeah, I'm like, did Richard just say that?
Yeah.
anyway, the point is that you're right. What you just said, you have to cut yourself open, but that doesn't happen automatically. You have to find your voice, and sometimes that takes forever.
Takes years.
Years, maybe a lifetime. Some people never get to it in stand-up comedy. Some people never get to it in real life. That's what makes your father brilliant, okay? Because you said that you watched the movie and there wasn't too much of what you hadn't seen before. I wasn't aware that in the mid 60s, late 60s, he was hired to do some gigs in Las Vegas. Now, that's a lot of money for anybody, let alone a black man, let alone a black comedian, okay? And he goes out on to do one of his shows, and I believe he's performing right around the same stage as Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, those guys. And he realizes that he's just performing to please the white audience. And he has an epiphany, and he says, fuck this shit, I'm not doing this. And he starts cursing and going crazy, whatever, right? The booker and owner of the hotel calls his agent and says, you know,
he's literally swinging on
swinging from the chandelier.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And he says, that's it.
Yeah, he's got to go.
He's got to go. So he fucks up his engagement in Vegas, which is a lot of money.
Yeah, but that's, but he wasn't speaking truthfully from himself.
But how many people? What I'm saying is,
how many people can do that and take that?
And then go. He disappears. Yeah. He goes to San Francisco, according to the documentary. And he becomes a hippie for, I don't know, some months, maybe a year. Then he comes back to L.A.
No, before he came back, he then went on the Chitlin' circuit for a while.
He did.
They didn't talk about that in the documentary, but he went. He rediscovered himself in the South, in the clubs that, like, Moms Mabley and all these Red Fox used to perform in. That's where he went. And you know what's also interesting? You bring up an interesting point about that one video that was filmed, one of his first tapings in the East Side.
The first video recording, concert recording.
Being comfortable with himself and whatnot. He even gets more comfortable with himself as the show goes on. You even see not only do you see the internal change over the course, you see it within the 60 minutes.
Right. The first half of the show, it's uncomfortable.
And then he starts to settle in. You know, I think stand-up's a lot like that. I think it's like baseball. I find like this. My problem with stand-up is I always come out of the gates hot for like the first 5 minutes. And then I settle in too bad where I'm like, oh, I got him. And then I start just having bad habits and going off on different things, and then I lose them. So, like, I'm like the pitcher that comes out for the first three innings and then gets knocked up in the fourth and has to, like, settle back. You know what I mean? Versus, like, you know, there are times, I usually come out strong, and then if I'm going to lose them, it's going to be, like, maybe 10, 15 minutes in after I feel like, oh, I got them.
For me, it's like, if I go on stage, usually they love me off top, just flat out.
Yeah.
It's Richard Pryor's son. And they immediately... But I'm more of a mellow person when I warm up people. Like, you know, I can't come out on stage. I don't have that, you know, where a lot of comics come in, don't have that joke where it comes into music, you know, intro music. Hey, how y'all doing? What's good, mother sucker? I don't do all that hype.
How y'all out there in the background?
You know, I'm more, you know, come in and it's like either you're going to love me or I'm going to get you. But once I got you, dude, it's like smooth sailing from there. I rarely lose a crowd once I have them.
For me, it's just bad habits.
Right.
I start going off about something that has nothing to do with nothing
because I'm like, it's like, yeah, you're my friend now.
I've gotten too far off the script. Like, my stand-up style is the script is made to be driven off of.
Right.
I'm not on the script. It's like a road. I get it off-road. But sometimes I just get crazy off-road. I'm drinking on stage. You know?
You ever get so bad? Like I know for me, I'll tell, you know, you'll live a life experience, right? You'll write the joke about it. But then you'll go up there and perform the joke. But if you feel like the crowd is so close to you, like they're your real connection to friends, you start telling more of the story and shit. I had a joke, dude. I almost slipped up, said the girl's name in it. Like, I'm in the middle of this bitch over here, such and such. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I messed up, said her name, like where she grew up and stuff. I'm like, man.
I switched the story enough. So I try to switch it enough so that if she listens. I mean, sometimes they do know I feel bad, but you know.
Right.
I found a clip of Richard Pryor live and smoking, okay?
I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but I have a list. No, it's exciting. I'm very excited and stuff. I'm glad y'all didn't move. A lot of y'all. But I imagine a lot of y'all will be leaving during my shit. But that's cool, too, because that should be in the
film.
And I hope I'm funny and shit, you know, because, you know, just to be a nigga standing up here and just be saying nothing ain't shit. But I hope my shit is funny, and I like to always want to do that, man. You know, white dudes used to do that in gym class after they take a shower. They come out the shower and be going, "Hey, Dick, can you do that?"
No, but I will tomorrow, motherfucker.
Get a process and shit, yeah. Be Puerto Rican.
You know he's mixed.
He'd be Puerto Rican with a process. In the Midwest, Puerto Ricans was famous. Not like in New York.
I told you my grandma.
No, because they got a lot of Puerto Ricans in New York. But in the Midwest, they don't have many Puerto Ricans.
That's right.
They have like three in the whole Midwest. I was one of them. I was jiving. But I had my shit together. Got some pussy, too. Only thing that gave me up when I was coming.
Oh, shit!
That's not Puerto Rican.
I always wanted to be something. I never wanted to be white.
Hope not online.
No, I always wanted to be something different, you know, than a nigga, because niggas had it so rough. I tried to be, you know, a black cat with neat hair. I thought that was the problem, the hair. I said, man, then why they dig me? So I gotta process.
Wrong.
Anyway. So, I mean, the difference between... This is billed as his first concert film.
Okay? It's the truth, man.
Okay. It's at the New York City Improv, Bud Friedman's original Improvisation was the name.
That's where it is?
That's what that was, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That was at the Improvisation, yeah. So the interesting thing about that is that it's nowhere near of the Richard Pryor that you know in...
As like that, yeah.
Yeah, like live in concert, live on the Sunset
Strip. That's what made him who he is, though.
Oh, yeah. This is the shit, man. This is the type of shit that you're talking about splitting yourself up, but that's painful to watch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He probably goes home, he's smoking cigarettes. He doesn't look like he's high at all. He's kind of pretty straight. Now, we saw three tapings of Live on the Sunset Strip, was it? Oh, no, Live in Concert.
Yeah.
And then he came out in Long Beach, and the first one, the first recording, as you were saying, Rich, earlier, he bombed. He completely bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was recorded. And he says, you know what? You guys paid a lot of money. I'm just going to go because this ain't really working. And he did the show again the next night.
It's amazing to me, though, that he could do, I mean... The performance the next night was just just so amazing.
It wasn't right.
To come back from that, though, to come back from just like, you know, he's never been on stage before or something, you know, and then the next night just fucking knock it out of the park.
He wasn't right. This is what we're talking about. Simon, you're talking about connecting with the soul, with the heart, connecting with the audience. If you go out on stage and the first thing you start doing is, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You're trying to do some formulaic bullshit that maybe the joke is written funny and it's well, but that's not what's going to be funny. What's going to be funny is how it's coming through the vessel, you, right?
Right.
And what makes it funny coming through you is your connection to people.
Yeah.
And your connection to people is dictated, or the joke is dictated by the timing of it, right? The ebbing and the flowing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, it was also one of his first... big shows back after the fire, after burning himself. So
No. That's Live on the Sunset Strip.
Oh.
Yeah, you're confused.
Man, you keep calling everything that Sunset Strip show.
Yeah.
Richard, he's crazy. He's telling me all these stories about Rich Pryor before, too.
Live on the Sunset Strip, he's wearing the red outfit with the black shirt.
Yeah.
I'm talking about...
I thought you were talking about from the documentary.
No, excuse me. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is
Live on the
Sunset Strip. Live on the Sunset Strip... They were supposed
Sunset
to record.
No, you're right. I'm sorry.
They recorded twice. The first bombed. Right. He only did about an hour. He was supposed to do an hour and a half. Right, and then he was look, it's just not happening.
My apologies. Yeah.
Came back the next night.
My bad, man.
Yeah. My apologies.
It's all good.
I wasn't yelling.
I do a lot of
I'm over here in the corner.
I didn't
want him to beat me up outside after this thing.
I remember when.
6'3".
He might
beat me up. Right.
But Live on the Sunset Strip was recorded, the album, in two or three different locations.
Okay, yeah.
Remember, you thought it was recorded at the Comedy Store?
Yep.
Right. So, and it wasn't. It was recorded at the Long Beach Amphitheater or some shit. The first two times. So I got a clip, and it's noted as the clip that... he's heckled.
No, see, y'all spawn, see? Y'all don't know about that coal and shit back, like up in Illinois where I'm from. See, y'all get some coal. I guess I get coal here, get 50.
Yeah.
Y'all get mad in the mother. See, you know what, 50 outside, man. Shit. And fucked up my day. Shit. Back there, man, in Chicago in the Midwest, boy, it gets cold. I'm talking about cold. Make you change your... What is... This ain't Johnny Carson, motherfucker. Outside, the wind be waiting on your ass around the corner like this, be waiting for you to come outside.
Here you come.
And that shit, boy, I came from California, I hadn't been home about 5 years, and I went back home, and I had some summer shit like this, you know, and it was cold. That wind waited for me to get into the street. It didn't even do nothing. nothing while I was walking through the airport. As soon as I got outside, it was like, get your shit, put that shit up around your head. And you can't be prejudiced in the winter because it's too cold. Right? You be trying to find a doorway. Hey, man, it's cold. Be prejudiced this summer. Fuck it, it's all right now.
Bullshit!
Bullshit. My dick. People in the audience get hostile. You drunk, motherfucker. I stopped drinking. I haven't had, I used to drink a lot. I've been 7 months. That's a strange, it's really strange.
Huh? I don't believe that shit.
Oh, you don't have to. I know you ain't gonna believe it because you fucked up.
Hey.
Shit. I just thought I'd try that for a while, you know, after 20 years. Give yourself a break. I'll probably die tomorrow. Trying to slow down, you know. But it's different.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Well,
fuck that bridge.
No, I've just been through, like, a life. In your life, I guess you go through changes in your life, you know? You get one woman and you just fucking change. Something happened in my life, just fucking changed my mind about all the shit. Motherfucker, you go home, be fucked up.
How's your mama?
Well, how's my mama?
I
beg your pardon. I'll slap you in the mouth with my dick.
This motherfucker asked me about my mama. How's your mama?
Yeah, that's okay. What makes this clip even just as good or like just as important as that live and smoking is because, again, he's sober. He's a little out of his element. You know what I mean? Now you're performing on a different wavelength, right? The worst thing that can happen for a comedian is to be on stage where it's kind of black out there. You just see lights. And some motherfucker starts yelling shit out of left field. It's almost as if somebody's throwing a fucking shoe at you and out of nowhere hits you in the head when you're having a speech.
Yeah, it's completely different, especially even like a comedy club, because you can see him in a club.
Yeah, well, it's easier if you can see him because you can look at him and pick him apart. Right, exactly. What are you? What's wrong? You know, but if you don't even know, because sometimes you don't even know which side of the room to turn to.
Right, exactly. Right. It's so fucked up. And the first time I watched this concert, I was like, and the thing is, he doesn't even get upset. He doesn't even get pissed off. He's very nonchalant and he's smooth with it all.
What's crazy to me is like how much they still love him, where they can heckle him, but they're not trying to go in. They're just having fun. Yeah. But it's almost like people look at Richard like, that's my boy Rich. Like,
no, but they got
they just say shit because they want him
to incite him. Like,
exactly.
Hey,
that guy was an asshole.
Right, exactly. Because it's like, I'm on film about to do this big show. And he's like, Rich, my G, what's good?
But it ain't even my G.
Right.
It ain't even my G. My man's like,
yeah,
bullshit. And then you're Rich. You fucked up. I mean, come on, dude. The guy's doing his set. You know what I mean? I'm gonna play one more clip. I remember when I first got the CD compilation, and it's Deep 2, which is a Warner Brothers compilation. It's pretty dope, actually. It's got about like fucking 12 albums. I remember having the idea that wouldn't it be funny to do a bit about a stuttering Chinese person, right? And I'm listening to the fucking audio, and I'm like, no, it won't, because Richard already did it. Right. Which is fucked up, because you can't listen to Richard. You can't... You can't really listen too much of it, because...
If they ever had, like, an ethnic IQ test, you know the Chinese gonna win, right? Any motherfucker eat with two sticks has got to win. You ever try to be fucking with them sticks, Zach? You could starve to death. A lot of this shit.
be starving an Indian and won't eat them cows?
Mother said it's a religion.
If I lived in India, Jack, I'd wake you about 3 a.m. when wasn't nobody around, Jack, and get me a 2x4, I'd be out there in the street, I'm like,
Said, we're going to eat tonight, baby. What about the reincarnation? I said, I'll worry about that shit when I get back. I'm hungry tonight.
You know what? I wanted to tell you about a Chinese restaurant I went in, and I heard the funniest shit that I'd ever heard in my life was a Chinese person that stuttered. I had never heard a Chinese person stutter in my life. And this motherfucker was off into it. And his friends was trying to help his ass. I'm like, don't you eat? That motherfucker was still on my Chinese people be fucking with you. I think it's because niggas order everything on the menu. I know my friends do when we go to the restaurant. Niggas be talking about, you got any pork fried duck? Some chop suey chitlins? I got one friend, he always orders biscuits and shit. You got any biscuits back in that motherfucker? I'm gonna slap up this chop suey. I ain't leaving shit. The nigga drinks the hot mustard. Name David, he just drink the mustard, Jacob.
Yeah, that shit hot, but ain't like in Louisiana.
Chinese people bring a bill to your ass, too. Right? You say, $48 for what? You know, and they always get smooth. Yeah. You'll have 2 lots of 2. One imperial soup, a Cantonese or something. And if you really don't understand, they send that stuttering motherfucker over there to explain to you. Bitch, you just throw your money out to here, motherfucker. Take some. Leave me the fuck alone. I always ask for the check before I'm finished and make them mad, right? Say, you got 2 more dishes.
Oh, they hate this.
Say, man, I can't eat no more of this shit.
You order shit, you eat shit.
I mean, you know, just a storytelling gift, whether it's his own personal life experience or his own take on stuff.
Right.
You know, that's fucking magic. And very difficult to do. Just very difficult to
Extremely.
Do. And my man makes it look like, you know,
effortless,
you know. But anyway, I mean, check out those early concert film Live and Smoking, and then definitely Here and Now, so you can check out the heckler stuff. I want to go back to, like, you know, like we were talking about earlier, the hierarchy or where you are in the relation with your brothers and sisters. I mean, you all come from different moms and shit.
Right.
And, you know, that's got to be weird. You know,
no, it just
mean?
Makes us black.
Just makes you black. That's it. No, but I'm saying, I mean, I have my own problems with my own sister. We have the same mom. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like...
What, you Puerto Rican?
Yeah, you know it. I'm black. I'm black. There you go.
I'm from Ohio. If you're not white, you black.
Yeah. No, I'm black. No doubt. But I'm saying, it's like, so... Are you your relationship with Rain or Richard Jr.? I know you and I spoke about
the kids. Honestly, it was crazy. You would think that we would not get along. We all get along. We just weren't raised together. Like, the older three and the younger three are separated just genuinely because they're the same age as our parents. And it's really hard to have somebody that's a sibling that tells you everything to do just like a parent.
Right.
Like, I remember my mom told me a story how she and Rich, when they were dating, she's like young mid-20s.
Your mom?
Yeah. Rich told him, you know, take him on to Disneyland and I want you to hold the money. And she's like, why don't you give it to your daughter? She's 17. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, so it's like, you know, so mm-hmm. for us,
it was like my older sisters and my brother looked at the younger three, like me, Steven, and Kelsey, the younger three, like almost like, oh, yeah, what's going on? You're almost my child almost.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So then, you know, we dealt with that. But outside of that, we all got along. It was our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents hated each other.
Isn't one of your sisters doing comedy?
Yeah, Rain.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. She's still doing comedy?
Yeah. Oh, she's not just a comedian. Rain does a full on
performance.
Like, performance. Yeah. She sings,
like
acts.
A one woman show.
Yeah,
type
it's
thing.
Called Fried Chicken and Lox. Right. Very talented.
Right.
Very good show.
Right.
Very good show.
Where can we check it out? Or any of our listeners?
I have no idea.
I read her book. I mean, I was
Jokes my father
yeah,
never
yeah, 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 yeah. I try to read as much. I mean, I have this, I don't know.
They know about your picture?
Your picture. I'll probably post it up on.
Yeah,
on
man, y'all got to put that. He's got a picture, man, in his living room.
My painting.
Painting. Yeah, Richard Pryor, man.
Yeah,
I have
a dope ass painting.
He has a dope ass pad. Yeah, yeah.
You know, actually, I performed with your brother, one of your brothers, who was in that documentary in Birdland in New York City. Or he was singing. It was a music.
Richard Jr.
It was a music open mic, but I got up and did stand up.
Oh, yeah.
It was a Birdland, which I think is Charlie Parker, right?
Yes.
That's Birdland's club, right?
Yes.
Right in the theater district. I did a show there.
I've never been new.
On on Monday nights. On Monday nights, I think it is. They do this like historic open mic that's been like popular forever. You know who else stopped by? The lady from the Brady Bunch that played, I think, Jan. Who she's a Broadway actress and singer. Does a lot of TV stuff.
Okay.
And so
I thought she was going to say she was telling jokes.
I had a horrible set. I did horrible that night.
Well, you don't have to tell
That's
us.
Not true. I didn't do that bad, but well, here's what happened. Whenever you're doing comedy or something, the MC didn't announce me as a comedian.
Also,
so I come out and they're expecting me to sing.
A rapper.
They had to, dude, in order to do stand-up at us where everyone's singing, which is already hard as it is.
Right.
Okay. At a place like that that's world-class, you have to say, guys, we're going to take a break from the music. Our next guy's doing jokes. Because now I have to come out and be like, my first thing I said was, I'm not singing. I'm here to do comedy. And by then, it's just like,
it was immediately they're let down.
I didn't come here for this.
And right. You know me, I'm always doing new jokes all the time. I started into a brand new joke I just came up with the afternoon, but that's me.
Yeah, you know me.
You know me.
Yeah,
you can
you
catch
know
me like the ABC, APMD.
Hey, yo, real quick, I want to give a big, like.
So we rap?
No. Rap. We'll rap it a little bit. I want to do a little rest in peace to Ray Manzarek. Maybe you do, maybe you don't know. He passed away actually a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, he was
The keyboardist was the best. If you go back and listen to The Doors, Jim Morrison was great with his poetry and his music, but the real trippiness of The Doors is the keyboard.
Right.
It's like the real funky that takes you away.
Okay. I'm gonna play a track, a different version of Riders on the Storm, and it's from the album Yonder Boy, Shallow and Profound. Yonder Boy is a young kind of like fucking, I don't know, European kid with a Kurzweil keyboard, and he fucking put this whole album together. Now peep this shit. Thank you. That's Yonder Boy, Shallow and Profound, Riders on the Storm. That's their interpretation of the track. That's pretty dope, man. Just a little different. Just a little shout out. A little tribute to the late Ray Manzarek.
Rest in peace.
Big up, Ray Manzarek, you bomba clad, pussy clad, playing the keyboards, man. Big up.
And Esther.
Where can we find you next?
Where are your upcoming shows?
I'm doing L.A. locally all the time.
Okay.
Continuously, all
so
the time.
So do you have a website or is Facebook, Twitter?
Yeah, I got where, all social media. Everything.
You?
Facebook, Twitter,
How can people
Instagram,
get a hold of you?
Everything's
you
under my name,
You can go to
Mason
my
Pryor.
Page, Nestorius.
You can literally just go to Mason Pryor. Everything is under my name. You can Google me, dude. I've been like that my whole life. Not even on some, like, Google me, bitch.
Yo,
like,
Google this, bitch.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm my Google.
Yeah, Richard Pryor was too famous. My whole life has been on the web since I was born.
I see.
Yeah. I didn't get that, what is it, anonymity thing?
Anonymity.
Anonymity.
Hey, you know Anna? She's a lovely gal.
Anonymity.
What do you do
like to support your income?
Whatever the fuck I want, baby.
Well, you know what I do?
What you do?
I teach black people how to say anonymity. That's one of those words that they have a hard time saying.
The Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I go to the projects and I go anonymity.
And I actually go to Nestor's house and do marriage counseling. So he's his wife.
You haven't met my wife yet. She told me you're cute. That's what she told me.
That's the worst thing that
I know.
Dude, let me tell you something. And I'm not gonna say no names because I don't wanna get nobody in trouble.
Right.
But I used to live in Malibu.
Right.
And all I'm saying is one time I was staying with some people.
Right.
And
some people that knew people.
It was some grown people.
Yes.
And basically, like, they let me rent out the room.
Right.
Malibu's expensive.
Sure.
So I'm there, right? And I come out and it's like I'm coming out to my side of the house.
Yeah.
That's how rich they are. They
right,
got
right,
they,
right,
I have
right.
my own side.
Right.
And his wife is walking down and I see her and I don't have a shirt on, dude.
Right.
3 weeks later, I was kicked out.
Right. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
You gotta go.
You gotta go.
Did you touch your nipples when she was coming out?
No, I wasn't even that bad, man. I didn't, you know. I mean, I was jacking off and shit, but.
I was in
the bushes. Hey, you know what?
Was that a house up in Truncus Canyon?
No, it was actually past, what was it?
Because I was at that house.
Yeah.
You know what else you got to add to your classes? The word Costco.
Costco.
Brothers always like, hey, I got a Costco's card.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we're going down to Costco's.
Yeah.
The brothers that go to Costco's.
Costco's.
Or Fred Meyers. It's not Fred Meyers. Fred Meyers.
Right. Is that what it is?
We're going to wrap this up.
We can't let it wrap up after letting the white man say some foul racist shit.
Yo, him.
You just going to let him get away with it?
No, say racist shit. Find me one black guy that says Costco card.
I don't know.
Costco's.
What was you doing in Costco anyway?
I'm from Seattle, so Costco's is from Seattle. Every black guy I know is, man, I'm going to Costco's.
Really?
No, it's Costco.
I thought we fooled with Walmart, man.
Yeah, Costco's.
No, that's for the rednecks, the Walmart.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, you want to see some sweet people, go to a Walmart.
Some nice, good,
there'll be some people looking for fucking fishing reels at 3 o'clock in the morning. These motherfuckers don't get I'm going worming and
Walmart
is amazing, dude. You can get a gun.
All the lakes are closed, but they're going worming.
Oh man. Right. They're fucking crazy.
Unbelievable.
We're gonna hang a nice blanket
on nails to hang our painting. Yeah. No, Walmart is a fucking trip.
Oh, yeah.
In some towns in America, there's nothing going on.
But that Walmart?
But Walmart.
Oh, no. Walmart's like a shopping mall, certain place.
No, it's the epicenter of fucking society.
What do we call them? Kroger Cuties and Walmart Wifeies.
There you go.
You'd go, like, I'm going to Walmart, and you'd get fixed, especially high school and stuff when you ain't got nothing to do but that in the mall. Walk around for 2 hours straight at the Walmart.
Hanging out at the Walmart, get some JoJo potato wedges.
Yeah. Pricing the bananas and shit.
Your mom lets you go somewhere, like, you know, go to the corner store and get this.
Yeah, you don't give a shit where to go. You just want to get out of the house and go someplace where there's people.
Pricing the bananas and shit, the cornflakes and shit.
You use the word house very liberally. It's more like a double wide.
Walking by, girls don't have nothing to say, just send the twirling keys.
Yeah.
What's up?
What up?
That's what they did. Okay.
Yeah, I drive.
All right.
I got a car.
All right.
I have an Astro van.
I drive my house.
Right.
I got a Winnebago.
Which for kids comes out as, I got somewhere we can have sex, literally.
No, but country chicks are the best, dude. I'm serious. If you find a good country girl, ooh. Forget these city girls. Every city girl out here, I'm a princess, bitch. No, you're not. You know why? Because you have no castle, no horse, and no army. You have a shitty dog, and your dog doesn't even listen to you. If you were a princess, you should be able to command forces, and you can't even command your own fucking self. Go fuck yourself. And then you get these girls like, yeah. No, country chick, dude, she's not gluten-free. She's right. not vegan. She just right. wants to ride you like a buck.
I used
she's
to live skinny, in Texas, dude. Eats beef. I love Southern girls.
Oh, country girls, dude. Yeah, like, yeah. doesn't give a fuck. Like, right. I don't care. We could just park here. Like, okay. like, you know? Hell yeah, girl. Let's lay in a field.
Country girls.
You ever notice, dude, like, girls out here don't cook for you? Like, that's the first thing I loved about Southern girls. They will cook for you, bro.
It's true. And they'll hear you. You'll be like, no, I'm not hungry. No, eat, eat. Girls here are like, how do you, where do you, which side of the popcorn bag do you put up?
The flat side goes down, you moron.
She was like, I want to go on a date with you. I was like, all right. She was like, are you hungry? I was like, nah. She was like, I'm starving. Let's split a salad. Split a salad.
Yeah. I haven't eaten. All I had was a wheat thin earlier.
I haven't eaten all day.
Which, by the way, after the show, we're going to go split a salad. We're going to wrap the show up.
Mason, wrap the
show
up.
Thank you so much for you know.
Hey, I just want to say, everybody, I want to say
us.
Thank you. Thank you, guys, for real.
Thank you for blessing us.
Thank you for Nestor for being a great Weed Connect for all these years. And
you know it. You know it. They would never they would never suspect me of it, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's our secret. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to Nestorius Public Radio on SkidRowStudios.com. Please feel free to tell all of your friends and stay tuned. Tune in Thursday nights, 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, midnight to 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go to iTunes, look up Nestorius Public Radio. Subscribe, download the episodes, rate us, write a comment. You know what I mean? I like to read what the hell's going on. And if you want to hit us up, NestoriusPublicRadio.com. The website is up, live and direct. Go to Facebook, Nestorius Public Radio. Like us there. And go to Twitter. And Twitter is Nestorius NYC. So thanks for tuning in. Thank you for Mason Pryor. Well, next time we have you on, we'll talk about, you know, what kind of underwear you use and your dick size and all that other shit. We'll talk about Richard Pryor. We'll talk about other shit.
Love talking about my dick.
Yeah, you know it. Anyway, big up Richard Pryor. Big up Mason Pryor. Big up Omid the Logic. Big up Simon Kaufman. Big up Rich Corbin. Big the fuck up Nestorius Public Radio.
Encourage me the whole way long. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit, so y'all gotta.